Jeff Timmer is former executive director of the Michigan Republican Party. Mark Brewer is former chair of the Michigan Democrats. And this is a republic, if you can keep it, with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
Welcome to A Republic, If You Can Keep It. I'm Mark Brewer. Later in the podcast, Jeff Timmer and I will be joined by our special guest, State House Democratic Leader Donna Lisinski.
But as always, we begin with some politics of the last week. And we may have a new candidate, a couple new candidates on the Republican side for governor. I say may because they're apparently not quite ready to be candidates, kind of, sort of, just yet.
Yeah, but Jeff, you played a big role in one of those candidates when you filed a complaint against candidate Craig. And within 24 hours, he did what your complaint indicated he should have done all along, which is file a committee. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a really simple, really basic ministerial thing. Is the law doesn't make a distinction between whether you say you're an actual candidate or whether you're a declared candidate or whether you're acting as a candidate or exploring, you know, dipping your toes in the water, whatever the case may be. There's a candidate committee and there's thresholds, and they're very, very low that once you cross those thresholds, once you expend money, and it can be through travel, it can be through receiving in-kind goods and services, professional services, consulting in this case, that was something I mentioned in the complaint. Once you receive dollar one or expend dollar one, you have to file a committee. And Craig didn't. He hadn't for 2 months. He'd been trying to play it cute for God knows what reason. Like I said last week on this show, he was either tremendously incompetent or has an arrogant disregard for the law. It might sound like, okay, it's just paperwork, but it's the law. And when you're the law and order candidate, when you're the police chief running as the law and order candidate, that you're competent to lead the state because you are competent to lead the largest police force in the state. When you don't meet the basic competency of being able to follow the logistic steps that you need to take when running as a candidate, or if you think the laws don't apply to you, that's not a law that matters, so I'm going to ignore it. Either one undercuts the credibility and the case for his candidacy right from the get-go. I mean, this guy is not ready for prime time. And I think the fact that he practically announced his candidacy on Tucker Carlson's show last week, but then kind of walked that back. The fact that that he's playing only to this Fox News audience shows that he may well walk to the nomination next August, but winning the Tucker Carlson primary does not position a Republican candidate to win in Michigan in November. And he's just running a foolish campaign to this point. There's no other way to put it.
Well, it does look like, even though he appears to be the anointed one by Ron Weiser and others, that he's going to have some stiff competition. We see this very successful, wealthy businessman, Rinky, get into the race now and talk about spending $10 million of his own money. We still see persistent stories and interviews with people like Dick DeVos and other hangers-on of the DeVos empire in Michigan, talking about Betsy DeVos running for governor. So the field seems to be getting more crowded, and Craig's entry hasn't seemed to clear it.
Exactly right. And there, you know, certainly there's no doubt that Ron Weiser and Republican power brokers, to the extent they still exist, are trying to clear the field and orchestrate Jim Craig's nomination. Rinky obviously has 10 million reasons why he thinks he can interrupt that. And that's going to also disrupt Craig's walk to the Tucker Carlson primary victory. But I want to shift gears a little bit from, I mean, the Republicans right now are a clown car. I mean, they've got a bunch of other kind of smaller candidates who are running for governor who between them aren't raising enough to like run a legitimate state Senate race. But Gretchen Whitmer's report showing the gobs of money that she's raised, and the fact that because there's been all these ill-advised efforts to launch recalls against her by legitimate Republican groups, adjacent Republican groups, clearly they've opened up the ability of Whitmer to raise unlimited sums from folks, and she's taking advantage of that. Contributions of $250,000, $100,000. She is raking in the dough. And so these guys can, try to orchestrate all they want. Jim Craig isn't going to be able to raise $30 million on his own. I don't care how prolific Ron Weiser is at fundraising. I know many major donors in Michigan, historic Republican donors, who have said they're not giving to him, to Craig. They're not giving to the party this year. There is a dent in some of the major donor fundraising. Maybe they're backfilling that with, online small dollar fundraising. I don't know. But the traditional lines of money aren't all going to be there for the Republican nominee. There's going to have to be a super PAC, which is standard, in the Republican Governors Association is going to have to step in big for whoever the nominee is. And so it's a strategic blunder for the Republicans to not have quashed those recall efforts that were going nowhere, because the fact that they didn't has given Whitmer an opening to raise money she otherwise wouldn't have been.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the press has just caught on to this now in the wake of the new filings, but Whitmer's been raising money under that exception for over a year. This showed up in earlier reports that she filed at the end of last year. And so anybody who was watching, paying attention, this was no surprise. This exception's been in Michigan law for decades. And it's a fair exception because a candidate shouldn't be subject to contribution limits when their opponents have no contribution limits. Now, as the law also indicates, that if she's never actually subject to a recall election, she's going to have to either refund the money or transfer it to a political party, for example, and so forth. But you got to give a lot of credit to her and her campaign for taking advantage of this opportunity, like you said, Jeff, that the Republicans have handed her. Unforced error by all of these grassroots groups and people just filing these endless recall petitions, which are going nowhere, but have given her a fundraising bonanza.
I guess the lack of strategy on the Republican side shouldn't surprise me. I guess, but it does. After so long, the Republican Party that I knew was part of, the John Engler Republican Party. Ron Weiser in the old days before this iteration would have been strategic, and they no longer have control. They lack the ability to be strategic, even if they still have the capacity to be strategic.
Mark and Jeff will be joined by the Democratic leader of the Michigan House of Representatives, Donna Lasinski, after these messages.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, federal, state, and local issues. Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, and local governments across the state. When it comes to measuring voter opinions, Epic MRA has been known as the go-to Michigan pollster for over 25 years. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
The Michigan Polycast. It's been called one of Michigan's top political podcasts by Hourly Detroit.
Each week, longtime political junkies Christine Barry and Walt Sorg offer news and views on Michigan politics and policy, as well as national issues impacting our pleasant peninsulas. And they are joined by some of the state's biggest names from government, politics, academia, and nonprofit groups, with an in-depth look at those issues.
Subscribe now to the Michigan Polycast, online at www.michiganpolycast.com.
Our guest today is State Representative Donna Lasinski. Lasinski is serving her third term in the Michigan House of Representatives, where she represents Michigan's 52nd House District, which encompasses northern and western Washtenaw County.
Representative Lasinski has been a leader in education, and her resume includes having served as the treasurer for the Ann Arbor School Board, director of the Washtenaw County Association of School Boards, and leader of the Education Millage Team, as well as a parent liaison for the Great Start Collaborative for Early Childhood in Washtenaw County, and as the interim director for Success by Six in Washtenaw County.
Representative Lisinski earned her bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Michigan and her master of business administration degree from Northwestern University. She is the president of Think Stretch LLC, a successful K-12 education company she founded to emphasize summer learning and retention that currently operates in 38 states. Thank you, State Representative and Democratic Leader Donna Lisinski, for joining us today. I want to kick it off by asking about a big topic. You know, the hearings have started in Washington of the Select Committee on the Insurrection. There's already been some pretty compelling testimony, and you've been a strong advocate here in Michigan of a Michigan-based investigation. So tell us a little bit about why you're doing that and where that effort stands.
So thank you for that question, because we have seen the efforts in Washington, D.C. Begin. They look like they faltered for a moment. Now they are, you know, beginning, and the testimony has begun. And I agree with you. And there's been some very compelling testimony today from folks who were there, from our police and public safety officers who were overrun. And I found the passion of those officers and their commitment to say that they would show up again to work on January 6th, knowing what was going to happen, because protecting our democracy is such an important thing for our nation and for the world. And so as we here in the State House have reflected, and a lot of members here at the State House have spent time reflecting after January 6th on the unique role that Michigan played in the January 6th insurrection. And we looked at it from a perspective of what we have personally encountered, what we have witnessed happen here at the Capitol, and what we were subjected to, and both as the citizens of Michigan and as legislators in the Capitol. And we want to understand what is Michigan's unique role in the run up to the January 6th insurrection. Again, another really compelling piece of testimony from today that I think will be on every evening news show is one of the officers stating that how he looks at this, the best way he can understand this is that when he's prosecuting a hitman, it's not just the hitman who gets prosecuted, it's the one who hired him, the one who sent him. And I think that's what we want to understand here. We know folks didn't just show up on January 6th, didn't just happen to cross paths and all be there on the same day. We know that folks showed up there with the intention of delaying the peaceful transfer of power in our democracy. And when we reflect on Michigan, as I reflect on the day when I was sitting on our House floor, just 10 feet inside a pair of swinging doors, as armed men, many armed men with many, many rounds of ammunition, were outside the door screaming, chanting, pounding. As I felt the floor shake, as I saw the lines of Michigan State police officers, as I saw our sergeants in red coats, ready for anything, ready to stand in the way of anything to protect our democracy here in Michigan, that sure does feel like a dress rehearsal for what happens on January 6th. That sure does feel like a run-up to, like a precursor. It now feels like an omen, a warning. And again, those men did not show up at our Capitol here in Lansing. They didn't just happen to cross paths. They didn't just happen to be there that day. It was planned. It was organized. Quite frankly, it was disguised as a grassroots movement when it was really a well-funded campaign using the same language in different states, inciting the same type of emotion, rehearsed, likely polled, quite frankly, to find those inciting phrases. And they came, they did what they did here in our Capitol, and then they went forward to the insurrection at our nation's capital on January 6th. We need to understand how that happened. Who were the voices that instigated, that incited, that helped lead to our insurrection? We need to understand those roots here in Michigan, because I am sure when we take the careful, bipartisan, bicameral look that I am proposing, that we will find those roots and understand how this happened and understand how to protect our democracy going forward.
You said it so well. I mean, there are three names that I would start with in the investigation into Michigan, and that starts with Mike Shirkey, Mishon Maddock, and Lee Chatfield. When you mentioned the dress rehearsal 2 Aprils ago with the armed men outside the House chamber and in the Senate chamber, Shirkey was very pointedly there with them, with his arms around them, advising them on how to take over the Capitol better next time they did it to achieve greater success. I want to know what was discussed when Shirky and Chatfield went to the White House to discuss overthrowing the election with Donald Trump. I'd love to hear that under oath. Meeshaun Maddock organized buses that took the insurrectionists with the intent to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power to Washington. She couldn't necessarily organize or fund them herself. I mean, she can't spell cat if you spot her the C and the T. But what role did she play? And she now leads the Republican Party and kind of brings Ron Weiser along on a chain.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that curiosity, because that's why we need this committee. Mark, I'd love to hear you.
I was just going to point out, and you know this, that several of your colleagues during the Electoral College meeting in December tried to enter the building and hold an alternative Electoral College session, right? Those are folks that you're serving with now. So, you know, again, as you both pointed out, this got deep roots. And there's been event after event after event, all focused on our capital, our state government, that mirrors what's been going on at the federal level.
And I'll tell you, you know, right from the beginning, so in January, and we were sworn in and we had our ceremonial first day of session. You know, it was the day after that we introduced our first resolution to call for an investigation and to call for censuring or removing from the House floor members who don't support the basic premises of democracy, and who did not and have not upheld their oath of office, both to the Constitution of the state of Michigan as well as to the Constitution of the United States. You know, we took that very seriously as House members introducing that resolution. What that means to me is that when you, as a sitting representative, knowingly sign on to a bogus lawsuit based in conspiracy theories to throw out the vote, to overturn the lawful vote of every Michigander to delay the peaceful transfer of power, you are instigating and inciting. When you meet privately as the Senate Majority Leader, as you pointed out, Jeff, again, he has said publicly that he met privately with the militia members in his Capitol office to advise them on their tactics. When you are on the stage, as we have seen many photos now come out, we don't want to miss the kidnapping conspiracy and murder plot against the governor. When we have repetitive pictures, when we know militia members who were at our Capitol in Lansing last April 30th, last year, when we see those same militia members in photos with elected representatives from the House and Senate side, sharing the stage, conversing with each other, then when we hear and we understand the roots of the conspiracy plot against the governor, and then we see those same members charged with crimes and who are in their hearings and testimonies now, it's too close for comfort. We need to ask the hard questions. We need to understand, Jeff, as you pointed out, what are the conversations that are happening? Are you saying behind closed doors, hey, I don't think this is a good idea, buddy, but I'm happy to go out with you on the stage and whip up the crowd and whip up some sentiment. But, you know, hey, I don't think it's a good idea. Are you saying behind closed doors, hey, here's the words that I found work well with crowds. Are you advising them on how to incite? We don't know. We deserve the answers to those questions, because the people on April 30th and the folks on January 6th didn't show up there by accident. And to your point of the 15 Michigan Republican legislators who joined the lawsuit, and then the legislators who brought false electors to our Capitol, I want to understand what other actions were taken that day. Did they attempt to file paperwork that these folks were the lawful elector in our National Archive? Did they attempt, how far did that conspiracy go to interfere with the peaceful transfer of power?
Yeah, I don't want to let you mention the people who signed on to the ridiculous Texas lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I don't want to let the 11 senators, half of the Republicans in the Senate, who signed the letter to Congress urging them to throw out Michigan's 5.5 million votes. I don't want to let those people off the hook either, because they are just as guilty of malfeasance as those who signed on to the Texas lawsuit. And they've kind of escaped a lot of the attention.
I believe it has. We introduced the resolution on the House side for censure. And clearly that's what led up to us introducing the bipartisan or introducing the resolution for a joint select committee to investigate the roots of the insurrection here in Michigan is because, you know, when we first came in, we're literally a number of my members days into the job and just starting to understand that the folks that they're serving with on the House floor may not be willing and have not demonstrated themselves willing to uphold the Constitution of the state of Michigan as well as of our nation. As we went through the next couple of weeks, months, and we saw no action being taken, no accountability, no apology, no reckoning, no recognition that what they had done was wrong, that it was anti-democratic and anti-patriotic. When we saw no recognition of that, when we saw, you know, at the point, some stumbling at the federal level to look into the roots of the insurrection, that's when we felt we needed to put forth this resolution for the bipartisan select committee. So I've been called partisan. I've been called partisan hack.
Well, I certainly hope that, yeah, that you get majority because that's what it's going to take. As long as the Republicans have majority, there will never be these answers unless or until they're compelled through some sort of federal action or through some sort of criminal prosecution to reveal some of this information. I mean,
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say we both know that with the Democrats in the minority in both the Michigan House and Senate, the chances of this, no matter how compelling the arguments of it actually moving, are precisely zero.
Mm-hmm. So we look at that and we hear that, and we're looking at all of our options, and I'm just going to try and frame this in a way that keeps me optimistic. I am in general an optimistic person. I wouldn't be a Democrat if I wasn't, because I want what's good and right for people. And I always see that shining horizon that we're trying to get to. But what I know is the same criticisms were leveled against the Flint water crisis, bipartisan joint select committee. The folks who introduced that, the brave senators and representatives who introduced that, were called partisan hacks. Were said they were just doing this to play political games, that they were just doing this to score political points with Michiganders. It eventually was demonstrated that we must look into this. This can't happen to any Michigander ever again. And we have to understand, we understand criminal trials very well, but we also have to understand the impact that policy, legislators, and leadership play in our civil society that led to an insurrection. And so I am hopeful. We are persistent. We will make sure we keep this issue up front. And we are seeing at the federal level some brave souls come forward. And here at the state level, we saw Senator McBroom come forward with his report that there was no voter fraud. So there are some glimmers of hope that truth may win out.
No, I agree. I mean, that report was a very welcome ray of truth and sunshine into a very dark and dastardly process here over the last 8-9 months. I was heartened to see McBroom's stance. I was heartened to see Shirky's comments. However, both continue and they seem intent on moving forward with these 39 bills to change election laws based solely upon the information that the report concludes was false. They're going to spoon feed they've roused the rabble. Now they're going to change the laws and make it harder for people to vote. Regardless of what the report says, the actions of the legislature in their intent with these voter laws and the reported ballot drive to end around the governor to enact these laws, that's where we need to keep our focus, because the report in and of itself is mere words on paper. Those actions will make a big difference.
So Donna, what is your read on your Republican colleagues in the legislature about these bills that Jeff just referenced, that they put so much time and effort into drafting? There's been all kinds of hearings. Are they going to move something? Are they going to move something soon? What do you think is going to happen here?
So I appreciate that question, because we just saw the success of the Unlock Michigan effort, right? which really has become this faux, this fake grassroots group. It never was a grassroots group to start with. It is a well-funded entity that is pushing all of the buttons. You know, Jeff, you use the words rabble rouse. You know, it's just turning up the heat on folks and using it almost at this point, catchphrases to rouse emotion out of folks. We just saw their success at going around a gubernatorial veto. And it's really demonstrating that moneyed interests can buy laws in our state, that our state intentionally elected a Democratic governor by a 9-point margin, by a landslide. But the moneyed interest folks on the other side have figured out how to go around that Democratic election, that safe, free, fair, and fraud-free election. And so I'm very concerned. And, you know, Jeff, as you noted, you know, they're saying one thing with the report, but they're doing another thing with their legislative actions and moving these bills forward. I do believe there is some intent there to have their cake and eat it too. And so if they can just do something with the election laws, but maybe slow walk it or do it at just the right pace, so that Unlock Michigan gets their next set of signatures to put that they can just simply take one vote unfairly, calling it based on the call of the people because they signed the petition. I wonder what they'll lean into there. I'll be honest, I'm not good at living inside some of my Republican colleagues' heads. And I have a crystal ball both in my office and at home. It unfortunately has been terrible at predicting what my colleagues will do next.
I've taken I've taken up some free space in some of their heads over the last year. I've noticed they give it to me rent free.
I'll let you live there.
Right, Donna, and you know, while they're doing all this stuff, you know, they've been neglecting, it seems to me, some of their basic duties. Right? I mean, here we are, almost 1st of August, and we still don't have a complete state budget. Right? What's going on there?
So I'll tell you, you know, a lot of the narrative out there is that, you know, the Republican one or the governor wields too much power with her pandemic orders. And then the governor isn't wielding enough power to get the budget through. Let's be very frank here. The legislature under Republican leadership has completely ceded the authority that it has. Yes, the governor can wield a veto pen. But Governor Whitmer never vetoed a single bill that came out of the legislature to offer pandemic relief to Michiganders because there never was one. For the first 4 months of the pandemic, the Republicans never called to order the Health Policy Committee, never even called it to order to take a look at anything. As we're looking now at the budget process and what we're doing and quite frankly not doing here, we were able to get a school aid budget out the door, and I am so proud of the work that we did on that. It's a historic investment in education, closes foundation funding gaps that Democrats have been fighting for 25 years. We were able to do that. Yet here we stand with rent assistance, which helps, you know, small landlords, which helps keep people in their homes. That rental assistance has sat since last December. It's still sitting there. It hasn't been administered and given out to the people. And it has a use it or lose it date that is less than 60 days in the future. And millions, hundreds of millions of dollars are sitting there to help Michiganders. Delays, delays, delays. Child care assistance. We want folks back at work desperately, desperately. We want every kid in school for a full day seeing their friends. Those dollars sat for 6 months, just sat there gathering dust. Hard-earned Michigan taxpayer dollars that just sit there. We have a budget surplus. I personally am not that excited about it because we had forecasted we'd be in a deep hole. Now we're just peeking our nose out over it. So while the surplus sounds like a lot, it's just because our initial predictions were so bad. But we have the money to do what's right by Michiganders, and we're not getting that job done. The governor was able to deliver her executive budget proposal on time in February, in the darkest days of the pandemic. Yet the legislature, neither the Senate nor the House, have been able to put forth a single counterproposal or bill to lay out what their plan is for Michiganders. And right now we're racing towards that government shutdown date. We're going to get there quick, And it would absolutely be shameful and disgusting if we were to shut the government down as we are coming out of a pandemic. Michiganders need us so much, and federal dollars were left on the table for so many months while Michiganders suffered.
Do you see any prospect at all that the legislature is going to come back into session this summer, or is all this now going to be put off until after Labor Day, which is only a few weeks from the October 1 deadline for a budget, right?
Absolutely. We have a calendar date of August 17th to return to the legislature. But as of yet, no committees have been called. And, you know, those of us, things don't just pop up on the floor for us to vote on. First, there's committee hearings, there's negotiations. Just to draft the bill, I'm a fairly, petite person. You know, that budget bill can be almost half my height. I mean, these things are thousands of pages long to lay out every line item. There's just mechanical things that have to be done. And so we will need to work hard. We are very capable of working hard. As Democrats, we have been working hard. We've put out a lot of our own proposals to make sure items are covered, but we are not in the majority. The majority holds the gavel, controls the timing, and controls the committees. And so there is a lot of work to be done.
We've had Dan Kildee and Andy Levin and talked with them about how difficult it must be to work with people do the serious job of governing, to do the serious job of making laws and policy when one major party, in this case in Washington, they're not in control. And in the case in Lansing, they are in control, but they're not serious about this job. They're not serious about it at all. It is all performative kabuki dance for their donors, their grassroots, to keep them stoked, to keep them agitated, so that they turn out in greater numbers than they otherwise would, in a greater size force than the math. Simply, there's fewer of them than there are of people who oppose them, not just Democrats. I count myself as kind of, you know, somewhere in this nebulous ground in between. I'm no longer a Republican. But it must be so difficult to watch these people engage in this, subversion of democracy.
Yes.
Well, let's then sit down and try to, discuss rural broadband as if somehow you can have I want to take over the country and, have the military install Donald Trump as president, but let's have a serious discussion here about the state budget.
Yes.
It must be a very weird thing to accept.
It's extremely jarring. I'm going to tell you that. It is extremely jarring. And so I know as the Democratic leader in the House, I have to stay laser focused on the reason I came to office. And the reason I came to office and the reason I chose in my late 40s to run for office, to first, school board and now this, is because I believed I could make a difference in the community that would benefit every community member. I consider myself blessed that I represent a district that is just barely Democratic. And I have to win, 40,000 votes to take office, not a few thousand votes in a primary. So I serve every single district in every single person in my district and every single person in the state. And so I am angered when the first budgets that were brought to committee, some of the department budgets that were brought to committee by the Republican chairs, cut every single budget by 75%. Even when we reflect back on Governor Rick Snyder, he was looking to move the state to a two-year budgeting cycle for predictability, for efficiency, for stability. And folks showed up, the chairs of the budget committees, subcommittees showed up with budgets that cut every department by 75% and said, and then essentially we'll decide 3 months later if you get another 25%. And we'll just string you along every 3 months at a time. That is a disdain for hardworking taxpayer dollars that I have never seen the likes of before. It is a lack of seriousness about the duty of governance that we are sworn to do that I have never encountered. And so you are absolutely right. It is jarring to sit there. It is jarring to sit there. We are on the cusp. We have the opportunity to create an inheritance for our grandchildren. My three boys out there who are unmarried at this point, not yet. But for my future grandchildren, way down the line, when we think about the opportunity we have to invest in Michigan, when I think about what my grandparents invested in the 50s and 60s with the creation of the highway system and the creation of schools, I mean, the number of the school buildings our kids are being educated haven't been updated since the 1960s. When I think about the investment that was made then and the opportunity for investment we have right now, we're on the cusp of being able to make transformational change with the American Recovery Plan that every Democrat in Washington voted for and not a single Republican voted for. When you talk about rural broadband, that's my hot spot for my district. 25% of my district doesn't have access. When we think about water and sewer infrastructure, when we think about the promise of clean water, when we think about our highway bridges to get product to market to help small businesses, we can make transformational change today, investments that our grandchildren will be talking about. And when we see nonsense and non-serious folks show up to work and put forth proposals that make no sense, it angers me, it frustrates me, and I still keep my head down. I come to work every day, and we will find the path to make Michigan better for every citizen. I will not stop until we do.
Donna, I'd be interested in your analysis, your partisan analysis of the Republican caucus in the House. We heard this from Dan Kildee, that basically they're always in the Congress looking over their shoulders. They're afraid they're going to get primaried. They're afraid they're going to get attacked by Trump or somebody's going to out-Trump them. Mm-hmm. Do you see that same phenomenon in the Republican caucus in the House? That, you know, they're worried about getting primaried. They're worried about fealty to Trump. How would you characterize that caucus?
We just need to look at the last election, where we had Republican members who were considered not Trump enough and were primaried out of office. So that did happen. And it's very recent in a number of folks' memories. I mean, we're at 7 months now, right? But that just did happen. So that's real. We look at Senator Ed McBroom, who issued a report that relied on a faithful and true representation of our election and how safe and secure it was and continue, the systems continue to be. And we see how he was censored by Oakland County Republicans, 18 to 10, not even close in Oakland County. And so it is very real. It is a vocal minority, I believe, or I choose to believe, quite frankly, of the Republican Party who has that fealty. I'm hopeful that my Republican colleagues take heart, take courage, and stand up for the people of Michigan.
That's where your optimism comes out, because, I mean, I know from my experience, my relationships, that it is a distinct majority in the Republican Party that has lost their freaking minds. I tweeted yesterday, I tend to be fairly prolific on the Twitters, and I tweeted that there's four types of Republicans these days. There's the authoritarian thug Trump acolytes. There's cynical adjacent politicos interested only in their power. There's the feeble-minded or crazy MAGA rubes. That's who makes up a lot of the legislators. And then there's a bunch of chicken shits who see all of the above and know it's wrong, yet do nothing about it because they're afraid of the next election. And they are the worst kind of they're letting it all happen when they could stop it if they just had a smidgen, a scintilla of courage, but they have none.
Well, I will tell you, I rely on the fact that there will be that courage. I rely on the fact that they will sincerely, seriously take into consideration the needs of the people of Michigan, that we will be able to have this bipartisan, bicameral committee investigating Michigan's role in the insurrection. It's absolutely essential to our democracy here in Michigan and in our nation that we do, and that I will see courageous moments on and off the House floor as we move forward for Michigan.
Well, on that hopeful note, we do need to wrap up for this week, and we really want to thank you, Donna, House Democratic Leader Donna Lisinski, for being with us today and bringing us up to date on what's going on at the Michigan Capitol. So thank you very much, and keep up the great work.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap for this week's program. As always, we invite your comments and questions. Email us at comments@therepublicpodcast.com.
Or you can add your comments on our Facebook page or via our website. If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on your favorite podcast app. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.